Hello and welcome to episode number 9 of the Punchin' Pod podcast with myself, Sam Brady. And of course, I'm joined by Mr. Oscar Pick. How are we, son?
I'm very good, mate. I'm very good. Obviously, we recorded on a Saturday evening here, but I believe we both went to see footy games earlier.
We've had a bit of a footy day today. Yours more successful than mine. Just tell the people where you've been at and what you've been up to.
Yes, so I went to see Bournemouth QPR at Loftus Road and 3-2 win, so can't complain. But obviously now we're on
your team, of course.
Bournemouth's my team, yeah. So I'll announce that on episode 9 of the Punch and Pod, yeah. Little exclusive for this episode. But obviously now getting down to business with combat sports in the evening. So quite a good balance there.
I was down supporting my local team. Unfortunately, it was an awful game and we lost 1-0. As you said, more positive talks this evening with all the latest combat sports news. We've got a lot to cover this episode, Oscar. But I'm going to give you 30 seconds to just promo your latest article. I've seen you've been down to a boxing gym and been writing some articles.
Yeah. So I did a little piece on Repton Boxing Club, which for the listeners that don't know, it's the oldest amateur gym in the country, basically. And you might see it in a lot of Guy Ritchie's films, actually. If you've ever watched The Gentleman and Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, the gym is used by a lot of film crews just purely down to its aesthetics. It's a very raw gym. And I basically spoke about the lack of funding, not just for Repton, but amateur boxing gyms up and down the country, and how Sport England, which is the main body that funds grassroots sports, is, in my opinion, responsible for that void in the funding boxing gym. So give that a read if you like.
It's where can the people check this out?
It's up on Northeast Londoner. So have a little read of that if you're interested.
Yeah, go check that out. I'm sure much more content in the new year now from yourself and from me, especially on the Sports Gazette, of course, the home of the Punchin' Pod. As we've said, a lot of combat news to cover this episode. There's only one place really to start. We're recording this the day after, 24 hours, the day after the news dropped that Anthony Joshua, Francis Ngannou lined up for March in Saudi Arabia. Oscar, let's start from an Anthony Joshua perspective. What are your initial thoughts and reactions to this fight? And from an Anthony Joshua point of view, was this a surprise for you?
Yeah, to be honest, it was a surprise because I was almost certain that they would go down the Hergovic route, where you've got a clear trajectory towards a world title there, with Hergovic being number one with the IBF. And the winner of that fight would be mandated to fight the winner of Fury Usyk. And obviously, the IBF's known as probably the quickest and most efficient sanctioning body when it comes to pushing their mandatories to fight the champions. So I thought that would have been the logical option for him. But obviously, in this day and age, with the heavyweight division, nothing should really come as a surprise. And with Francis Ngannou sort of floating in the background after that Fury performance, I think he was bound to be announced having a fight at some point in 2024, but I just didn't expect it to be against Anthony Joshua. I thought Joseph Parker might have been a good opponent for him coming off that performance. Maybe even Daniel Dubois, another fighter on that card. But for Joshua to go down this route of fighting Ngannou, other than the eyeballs, which it is obviously going to attract, and the intrigue from fans with Ngannou coming off that Fury performance, I can't really see this being the most viable option other than it just being a keep busy fight, really. I mean, you'd be foolish to completely rule Ngannou out in the fight because we all did that before the Fury fight, and look what happened. He was inches away from winning that fight. But we have to remember how bad Fury was. I mean, we can give Ngannou as much credit as he deserves, and believe you me, he deserves a hell of an amount of credit. But the thing that sticks in my memory from that night is Fury's performance, which was we spoke about it on the pod, and I'm sure you'll have your two cents on it. It was one of the worst we've ever seen Fury, as a professional, and I think based off that, I would have to heavily favour Joshua in this fight. His performance against Wallin, obviously we spoke about it in a previous episode, was just so assertive. It was so destructive. You felt like he's now finally found that balance between the older version of Anthony Joshua, who was just a big puncher, and this newer version who's more defensively minded and can actually box on the back foot a little bit. You've got all of that morphed together into one under the tutelage of Ben Davison. So in terms of his career, I think he's looked as good as he ever has done, and he'll, I make him quite a heavy favourite going into the Ngannou fight, even after that Fury performance. So, yeah, what are your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, is this, I feel like a lot of people, and myself included, did scratch their head a little bit when this was announced. But is this, could you not see this as sort of a smart move from the AJ camp? Because they're sort of taking a fight when there's other contenders out there like Hrgović, Weili Zhang, we know what Joseph Parker just did against Wilder. So is this sort of a fight where it's the less, the almost the least amount of risk that Anthony Joshua could have taken while staying active, while getting a big paycheck, and then he can wait it out for Fury Usyk to do their thing, and it sort of just keeps him busy without actually going into a fight that poses him much risk?
Well, I think that's definitely part of the thought process in Team AJ. I think you're going to want to take no risks before the Fury Usyk fight because he's got his eyes firmly set on the winner. And but I do think Francis is actually quite a risky fight. Although I favour Anthony Joshua heavily, you've always got that jeopardy of like, what will happen if he lands significant punch on Joshua? But I think
we saw what he
exactly
Tyson Fury, so
exactly. But I think when you weigh it up, you would have to say that Francis is less of a risk than someone like Hrgović, but based off what Hrgović has shown us, that he's capable of doing for a long duration, whereas Ngannou, who, let's be honest, has probably had the best debut in boxing of all time, still has a lot left to prove in the sport. I mean, I don't want to be too critical of Ngannou because I really obviously rate him off the back of that performance. But if you was to dissect those 10 rounds with Tyson Fury, a boxing pugilist would be very critical, really. I mean, I think because we watched the fight together and I was even telling you, like, Francis was making certain mistakes and doing certain things which was very novice-y and something you'd expect a debutante, or not even a debutante, but someone very early in their career to be doing. It was just a case of his heart, his desire, his physical attributes making himself more of a problem than he should have been against Fury. I think that was it. But now that the cat's out the bag, so to speak, I think Joshua will be much more prepared for what Francis will bring.
Do you think if, let's just say, as we said about Fury and the night went totally 180 what everyone expected, but if Anthony Joshua was to get through Francis Ngannou, would he be then ready for a Usyk or Fury, or would you still want him to fight a Hergovic or a Zhuili Zhang or a Joseph Parker after Ngannou.
Yeah, I think at this stage in his career, Anthony Joshua's gone through the acid tests. I mean, obviously he's fought Usyk twice before, so if he was to get that trilogy fight, it would have a completely different outlook, basically, based off what happened in those two fights. And for him to being ready for Fury, I think he'll be as ready as he'll ever be. I mean, we're not talking about an undefeated prospect coming through the ranks anymore. We're talking about a former two-time heavyweight world champion who's been in there with some of the best in the sport. And he's, coming to that point in his life where he's got a lot more experience now. And I think he will be ready. Whether he'll win the fight with Fury or not, I'm not sure. Or even Usyk. I don't know whether it'll be any different from the previous two fights that he had with him, but I think this version of Anthony Joshua will be as best as he'll ever be, basically.
If a Tyson Fury that showed up on the night against Francis Ngannou were to face an Anthony Joshua right now, Anthony Joshua would beat him. And I think, as you mentioned, any top-level heavyweight, I think, would have beat Tyson Fury on that night. But it was lucky for Tyson Fury that Francis Ngannou was across the ring in there with him. Francis Ngannou, who's never boxed in his life, if that was any top heavyweight, he would have lost that fight. And that's no disrespect to Francis Ngannou, because the way I look at this fight is, look, it's interesting on AJ's part, because I like the fact that he's staying active. I don't mind them fighting Francis Ngannou, because Ngannou's picked up some boxing credibility against Tyson Fury, but I do think it's still a sort of lose-lose for AJ in the fact that, as we said, like Fury, he doesn't really gain much more credibility in beating Francis Ngannou. I think people are still looking at Francis Ngannou and went, wow, he had a great performance against Tyson, but I think we need to remember it's still his second ever boxing fight against Anthony Joshua. And I think it's really interesting. You saw Eddie Hearn speak before the Fury and Ngannou fight saying, come on, guys, let's be fair. It's a money grab. Like, oh, it shouldn't really be happening. Like, it's a mismatch. And now 180, Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua are now taking that fight. I think they've seen an opportunity, the AJ camp. They've seen the reaction that Francis Ngannou has got off the back of his performance and Fury, and gone, do you know what? If we now fight him, I don't think it will get the hate and the disrespect that it would have done like before Fury. I think the reaction for Fury and Ngannou was like, oh, it's a joke of a fight, it's going to be a mismatch. Whereas now Francis has kind of put that doubt in people's head in terms of how good actually is this guy in a boxing ring. And the thing is, from a Francis Ngannou point of view, he's living his golden generation. This is his golden era. He's been underprivileged and undervalued in the UFC for years, and you've just got to say fair play. He's doing what he thinks he's deserved in his whole career. And the way I see it, it's a weird feeling, because I love Francis, don't get me wrong, but I still see him as an MMA fighter crossing over to boxing. And I think, and we could come back in a few years when he's built his resume of a few boxers and he's got a decent record. But I just think right now, Francis is just going to have a couple big fights against a couple big heavyweights, get a paycheck and go off into the sunset. And he could prove me wrong, as I said, but I'm not that much invested in the Francis Ngannou boxing journey as of yet, because I think, look, he looked good against Tyson, but he's probably going to lose to AJ. And realistically, we said this about Fury, but AJ should smoke him. Like, an AJ, what we've seen just a couple weeks ago, this should be a real mismatch. And look, like, again, no disrespect to Francis, I think he's shown that he's a decent level boxer. I would be more interested to see Francis in there against the likes of a Joseph Parker or a Zhang or a Zhang or that level, because I think Francis could actually be of that level, like not the top level of heavyweights that he's fighting at the minute, like the Furies and the AJs, but he's the level below. I think he's a level below. We just don't know. And I think even if he gets smoked by AJ in March, I still think there'll be questions around, oh, it's okay because AJ's like challenging for world titles, so it's okay if he gets smoked. So I'd rather see, you know, Francis in there, and then I'd be more invested in sort of his boxing career. But hey, he's loving it at the minute. He's getting love from the fight fans. He's getting his bag, and you can't blame the guy, to be honest. It was interesting. Straight after the Fury performance, I even had this conversation with my brother, and my brother was convinced. He was like, "Yeah, Francis can get in there with AJ," and I was like, "No. Let's calm down a little bit. Fury was terrible, and Francis was decent, but I didn't think it would actually happen." So he's gloating now, telling me that like I was wrong, but I gotta take it. What do you think about the whole Francis Ngannou boxing situation?
Yeah,
what is the limit?
I think we need to see more from him, because when you dissect that performance against Fury, as I said before, you would have to say that it was very novicey. I mean, his feet didn't look great, which is what you'd expect from a heavyweight crossing over from the UFC. I thought he looked very upright and robotic, which, again, I mean, Francis, he kind of did the fundamentals well enough to be problematic for Fury, but he kind of fought the way I expected him to, because he was very basic, and I think...
Well, that's what you
obviously
expect, right?
Yeah, that's what you have to expect, but for him to be even remotely competitive against... a different version of Fury when he's more motivated, that fight could play out completely differently. If he was to fight Alexander Usyk, Anthony Joshua, you have to be a level above. You can't afford to just stick to the basics at that level, you know? Like, you need a little bit more to your game. And I think he'll find that out when he fights AJ. Obviously, you mentioned him possibly being competitive with some of the heavyweights in the level below. And I would agree with that. I think based off his power alone, you would have to say that he could be in that mix.
Yeah, because it's one of them at the minute where I think he's only just going to be racking up losses at the minute.
Yeah.
When he's fighting the level of Fury and Anthony Joshua. And hey, he probably doesn't mind that. He's probably just grateful to be in the ring with heavyweight greats like them. But it's that thing of where does only he knows this, but where does he want his heavyweight boxing career to go? I believe, as I said, he's just going to have a few big money fights and then sail off into the sunset. But who knows, he might fight Anthony Joshua and then go, all right, this maybe isn't my level, let me try take a step down and fight some of the contenders and then build a little bit of a resume. Cole Frotch, he called this bad for heavyweight boxing. He said he wants to see the best fighters fight the best, and this is just delaying sort of the inevitable and sort of getting the championship fights. What's your thoughts? Is sort of Francis Ngannou being the middleman sort of a bad thing for heavyweight boxing? Or
yeah, I sort of agree with Frotch. I mean, we are obviously going to see Fury Usyk in February. But then, in the meantime, you're right, Anthony Joshua's got to stay active. And he's going to stay active by taking the fight that's going to make him the most money, basically, which is obviously the Ngannou fight. I don't know if there was any discussions for a Hrgović fight or a Zile Zhang fight, but I can imagine the money on the table in comparison to Ngannou would be night and day. So the Saudis, they're putting an unbelievable amount of pressure on these fighters at the minute to be in the fights that they want to see more than anyone else. And I think this might not have been Anthony Joshua's first choice, but it was certainly Saudi Arabia's and Turkey, His Excellency's first choice. But yeah, in terms of Ngannou being a middleman, as I say, I think he just needs to prove himself at a slightly lower level. But one thing I will say is that there will be a lot of people picking Ngannou to win that fight. I mean, even the people that I was with at the football earlier were saying, oh yeah, surely Ngannou's going to knock him out. And I think there's still that perception in people's minds that despite the performance we've just seen from Joshua in that Utter Wallen fight, you've still got fans who will say, oh, he's gun shy. He's not the fighter he once was. Yeah, you know, all these accusations that people throw at him. And obviously, based off what they saw against Fury, they're going to put two and two together and be like, yeah, Ngannou will win that fight. So the intrigue is there from some people, but I think you and me are both sort of confident that Joshua will come through that.
Yeah, I think the intrigue is different from different people. I think the intrigue from me anyway is not necessarily thinking Francis is going to win, but just seeing how technically good Francis is and how good of a boxer he actually is. Because I think this will be the real acid test for Francis, because, hey, he looked decent against Tyson, but as we mentioned, all the flaws that Tyson had that night. So I feel like this will be a real test for Francis. But then there's the intrigue of, as you said, a lot of people, he's an unknown entity in the boxing world, and Anthony Joshua's arguably the biggest name in UK boxing. So, and it's an interesting fight. It just is. Like there's no question that we will all watch it, and we're all interested to see how good Francis is, how Anthony Joshua approaches the fight, what's his mentality going into the fight. And yeah, it is just a really interesting fight. Another fight that's been rumored on the card for March is Zhang versus Wilder. We've just seen Wilder come off the back of a pretty shocking performance against Joseph Parker. So, your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, in that post-fight interview, you saw Wilder sort of tease with the idea of retirement. And he's basically done a complete U-turn on that. And I think he put in a social media post after the fight, he's like, right, I want to come back stronger. I'm ready for another challenge. So he's going to have a go at Zile Zhang, who, I mean, it's a really risky fight for Wilder. Like, one minute you're in there with Joseph Parker, who, yes, he's a very good all-round heavyweight, but he's not known as this destructive puncher, one hitter quitter type heavyweight. Then you're going in there with Zile Zhang, who's a completely different kettle of fish. I mean, he's just knocked out Joe Joyce in what a lot of people have had as their knockout of the year. Someone who previously people branded as being indestructible, having this granite chin, someone who just couldn't be hurt. So in some ways, I actually really respect Wilder for taking a fight like this, which is, I mean, let's be honest, it's not confirmed yet, so we don't know whether it will actually happen. But if it does, you've got to give him a lot of credit, because it is a risky fight. And if I was one of these top heavyweights, I would be doing my best to avoid Zhang, because he's a problem. And I think he could beat anyone on any given night. So it'd be a really interesting fight, and I hope it gets made.
Yeah, as we said, that one's rumoured. And of course, AJ and Ngannou isn't confirmed yet, but it's heavily rumoured. If those two fights, once again, on the same card in Saudi, before we jump over to the MMA world, just, I know we've talked about Saudi a lot, but we said this could be the future, and we're already having what? Card in December, and then 3 months later, we might be having another amazing card in Saudi. So,
yeah, I think it most definitely is the future of boxing. But one thing I will say is, off that Day of Reckoning event, I saw, and I discussed this with you, I mean, the arena was nearly half empty. I saw a lot of empty seats on that night. And I think the Saudis might want to consider doing a little bit more promotion in their domestically, just in their country, generating more interest around boxing, because at the minute, that interest clearly doesn't exist in Saudi Arabia. So I know they're not considering ticket sales as being a major priority. They're more focused on staging these events that are going to be viewed worldwide, and you're going to generate all those figures from the pay-per-view sales and stuff. But you know, it's not a good look for them if an arena's half empty. So they might want to consider doing a little bit more on that front by generating the interest more locally, maybe.
Yeah, from Francis Ngannou, one fighter who was very much undervalued within the UFC, to one fighter who's very completely not undervalued, and that is of course Mr. the notorious Conor McGregor, who last week in a Twitter video, which was quite amusing. Did you see the video, Oscar? I don't know if
I
you.
actually
Oh,
didn't, so I'll be
it
interested
was
to find out
yeah, it
about
was
this.
funny. He was swilling this wine in like a tracksuit in this fancy restaurant. Said he was going to announce the fight on New Year's Day. He actually jumped the gun on himself. He's going to come back International Fight Week, June 29th. Michael Chandler at 185 pounds, which raised a few eyeballs as well. Look, this is a very interesting one to get into because just for a lot of reasons. I know I've said on previous podcasts we have in UFC 300 in April, and I was a big advocate for getting Conor on this card. I think the dates lined up perfect for him. UFC 300, it's being built up as that it's going to be one of the best cards in the UFC's history, and I thought why not have the most notorious fighter on there? It's just it's built to be built around Conor McGregor, and I just thought it just would make sense. And look, it's kind of it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense at the same time, because if you, from a business point of view, UFC 300 is always going to sell massive pay-per-views just because of the number value it holds. You're always going to do millions of pay-per-views because of the number. So I think what the UFC have tried to do is have sort of two bites of the cherry in terms of you have this UFC 300 in April, which is going to do massive numbers, and then you get Conor on a card in June, which is going to do massive numbers. So they're kind of spread that that you know what I mean? They're kind of having two chances at doing massive numbers, which I get from a business point of view, but also I just feel like the more you prolong Conor's comeback, the more you're going to do damage to him. I think we've seen it so many occasions where you said Conor's going to come back here, he's going to come back here, and you've just prolonged it and prolonged it and prolonged it. And then he's come back and he's not looked the fighter he used to be. We saw that against Dustin Poirier. We saw that the first time when he got KO'd, and then the second time when obviously he had that leg break. So I just think UFC 300, just headline, just make that the headline, him and Chandler, and then build the card around that. And I think that there's been discussions apparently behind closed doors where McGregor and Dana White and the UFC have had disagreements because Conor apparently wanted to fight on that card, and the UFC have said this date of June 29th. So that's why I think Conor's gone, you know what? I'm putting some power back into my hands, and I'm just going to announce my own fight. And that's why I feel like Conor's sort of being a bit disrespected from the UFC. So he's gone, fuck this. Like, I'm going to take control of my own destiny. I'm going to announce my fight. So then at least you can't sort of change the date again and change the opponent, because now you're going to have MMA fans on your back because I've already announced it. And I think this is becoming sort of a not a very good trend where fighters are now thinking they should announce their own fight before the UFC officially announce it to try and like gain some sort of power over the company. But I just think it's also a state of where the UFC is as a business. I think gone of the days where they would rely heavily on the Ronda Rouseys and the Conor McGregors to pull them through a financial year and sort of make a card around them and sort of just focus on that one event solely. Whereas now I think we've seen, especially last year, they've distributed their events very well. And I think if you look at UFC 300, they've sort of, in a way, like shafted themselves, because you've got to put a good headline on UFC 300. You just do. But you've got Sean Strickland and Du Plessis, who I guess you might be able to turn them around, but it's a short notice turnaround as they're fighting in a couple of weeks. You've got Volkanovski and Ilia Topuria, who were booked. You've got Sean O'Malley and Cheeto, who were already booked. You've got who knows when John Jones is going to come back. So they've actually booked up these champions throughout the year. So they're looking at UFC 300 and going, we need someone to sort of headline this event. And Leon Edwards was at Villa Park last week as well. And he jumped on this trend of announcing his fight. Apparently, he's going to be headlining UFC 300 against Bilal Muhammad. And look, this fight didn't make me jump off my seat in the first place. And putting it on one of the biggest cards we've ever seen in the UFC, it just doesn't make me excited, to be honest. Like, look, you know I'm Leon's biggest fan. I love Leon. He's one of our own. But this fight against Bilal, I just see it being a one-sided competition, to be fair. I just think Leon is levels above Bilal. I agree that Bilal should be the next guy to fight Leon, because he has built up a good resume to get back into a number one contender spot. But as I've said, it's not one of those fights where I feel it's that exciting. And look, that doesn't mean to say you can't make it a co-main. Look, you put Leon and Bilal as the co-main of UFC 300, and that's fine. And they've already announced fights like Bo Nickel's fighting on that card, and it'll be interesting what they do with UFC 300. But I just thought it was set up for Conor McGregor's comeback. And the best Conor McGregor is an active Conor McGregor. So, hey, he could have been fighting in April on UFC 300, and then give it a couple months. You never know. He could have potentially been fighting on 304, 305. So he gets two, maybe three fights a year. Him fighting in June now, you won't see him fight. Maybe not again this year. So it just doesn't really make sense. I get it from a financial point of view, but yeah, I'm not really too sure about that. And it's interesting, he said International Fight Week as well. Typically we see that in July as well. And the one that really didn't make sense is 185 pounds. So that's middleweight, right? And I've never ever ever, even when McGregor's been out the sport, I doubt he's ever got to that weight of 185, and that just doesn't make sense. Like, why? Do you know what I mean? And Michael Chandler, I don't even know if he can make that weight. So that's a weird one. Whether that weight class changes, as we said, it's not. This fight hasn't even officially been announced by the UFC yet. No one's said anything. It's all kind of quiet on the Western front at this point. But yeah, it's a weird one. And then Chandler got piping up on Twitter. So again, yeah, it's an interesting fight. Do you have any initial thoughts, mate? Or
yeah, I mean, on the McGregor Chandler, I was very shocked to find out that it's potentially going to be at 185 pounds. But look, I feel like with these two, they're both in their 30s. They're both in the tail end of their careers. They don't want to be cutting weight. I mean, this threshold of 185 pounds, they don't necessarily have to be at that weight. It just gives them the freedom to not have to cut any weight, to be able to train as hard as they can for this fight. without having to worry about being in a calorie deficit ultimately. So I actually don't mind them doing that. Obviously, it doesn't give them an excuse to slack off. They've still got to train hard for it, but I can see how at first glance it might be a bit of a shocking prospect that, but I think it makes sense in terms of where they're at. And with UFC 300, what I will say quickly on that is that I feel like whenever a promoter, and I've experienced this a lot before in boxing, whenever a promoter hypes up an event to such an extent, it never really delivers to what people would hope. I mean, you mentioned Leon Edwards against Bilal potentially headlining. Obviously, that's not going to set the world alight. The fights further down the card might be more exciting, but they still aren't going to add up to what people might be expecting, yeah. Which is this huge event that's going to be a landmark moment for the business.
Yeah, what I will say is Dana normally pulls the rabbit out of the hat, and he normally does just come up with something that is amazing. But I, as you said, I just hope it's not a situation where over-promises, under-delivers. And as I said, I'm sure Dana will have plans. And if I hope Leon's on that card, because it would be a landmark moment for English MMA, for him being even the co-main to be on such a historic card. So genuinely, I hope he's on that card. I just don't really want that fight to be the main event, and because it's just, as I said, it doesn't really, like, if he was fighting Shavkat or if he was fighting Islam at lightweight, then I'd be like, yes, put that as main event. But Bilal, that could have been put on another card, on a main event, on its own card. Whereas now, we'll see. I don't know. I genuinely. Yeah, I don't know. As I said, they've got a lot of they've got a few champs. There's rumored that Tom Aspinall's been very active on Twitter in the past 48 to 24 hours, that he's basically saying that he feels like he's being disrespected, where he's not getting the next title shot. He's got to sit around and effectively either fight or wait for Jones and Miocic. So there's rumors that Alex Pereira might move up and try to become a champ at heavyweight and fight Tom. But then it's a question of, would Tom want to take that fight? Because he doesn't have to. He could wait. He doesn't have to take that risk. He could wait for Jones and Miocic. So then there's the question of, you could put that on 300, but then it's up to Tom to take it. As I've said, O'Malley's booked up. Volk's booked up. You've got Sean who's booked up. So it's kind of the only real options you've got left are Islam, I guess, is there. But that's why I thought, okay, it's not a fight for the title, but you've got McGregor Chandler, who's, that is the perfect fight to get fans interested in that UFC 300. I don't think Conor does want to cut. I just think he's so happy with just kind of being like around sort of that lightweight, welterweight size, and he came back against Cowboy at welterweight. Obviously, that was a couple years ago now. I mean, God, I love the days when Conor was a featherweight. I still to this day believe that was prime McGregor at featherweight, beating the likes of Chad Mendes, Jose Aldo. That was prime McGregor. But we're just in a different era now, and it's sad to say, going back to what I said at the start. Look, the UFC is a better place with Conor McGregor in it, but I don't think they necessarily need him anymore. And I think that's the sad reality of it. And I think McGregor and this dispute that he's had apparently with the UFC has sort of, he had a reality check in terms of, he thought maybe he's still this massive star that the UFC rely on, and they're definitely going to give me the big shot at UFC 300. So when they've turned around to him and gone, no, actually, we want you to fight on another card in June 29th, he's gone, I thought I was still that guy. Do you know what I mean? And look, Conor McGregor is still that guy. He's always going to bring in the numbers and generate massive pay-per-view buys for the UFC. But I feel like now, as I've said, the business model has changed, where they actually would rather not have, sort of rather not have, give the power to the fighters anymore. Where when McGregor was in his prime, he held all the cards, and what he wanted, the UFC did. They played to his tune. Whereas now, they sort of are saying, actually, we're going to dictate some of these champions. We're going to say when you're going to fight, who you're going to fight. And does McGregor like that? I think after Michael Chandler, if it goes tits up for him, he could just say, for me, if I was Conor McGregor, I would just say cheerio and sail off into the sunset. Go do your whiskey business. Go do your Irish stout. I think if you don't beat Michael Chandler, your days are just numbered. Do you know what I mean? Like, look, as I said, he's always going to generate numbers, but I don't think McGregor wants to not be at that top level anymore. It's either he's at that top level or he's out of the sport. And we've seen that in the past couple of years. His last win was in 2016. It's clearly that thing of McGregor only wants to fight when it suits him. And that's just not how the UFC work anymore, I'm afraid. I'm sure there'll be a lot of fights revealed for that UFC 300 card in the next couple of weeks. Obviously, close now in a couple of weeks, we've got Sean Strickland versus Dracus du Plessis to look forward to. And that's an absolute banger fight, by the way. So I'm sure we'll be doing a podcast nearer that time. I don't know if you wanted to touch on some of the recent upcoming boxing fights. I know we have the Smith fight coming up, Oscar.
Yeah, so I'll touch on that quickly. Obviously, Artur Beterbiev, he's the only champion in the sport at the minute with 100% of his wins coming by knockout. So he's this destructive puncher who a lot of people have been avoiding at light heavyweight, but this is a really good fight with him against Callum Smith, who a lot of people are actually picking because they think that Beterbiev is too old now and he's potentially past it. But if Beterbiev comes through it, he should be next in line to fight Dmitry Bivol, and that fight should finally get made. It's one that boxing fans have long been waiting for, and we obviously saw Bivol in Saudi, where he just completely walked over Lyndon Arthur. But this will be a really interesting matchup if it does get made between him and Artur Beterbiev. So fingers crossed for that.
Yeah, and another just quickly announcement that I saw this week. Manny Pacquiao announced that potentially he will be fighting Floyd Mayweather. Thoughts on that one?
Yeah, difficult to believe that, really. I mean, I think Manny Pacquiao has sort of been teasing for a few years that he still wants some involvement in boxing, basically. And we've spoken about this before, where you've got a lot of these ex-pros who can't walk away from the sport. So they'll go into coaching and punditry and commentary. But the ones that don't get those jobs or don't go down that route, they want to carry on fighting. Because they just want to keep hold of something that they've obviously experienced throughout their career. I mean, Manny doesn't need to be doing this. He ended his career on a not on a high, because obviously he lost to your Dennis Ugas in his last professional fight. But then when you take into account what he's done in those, I guess, 80 fights, I think, something like that, 80 professional fights, 8-weight world champion, you can't knock it. So he doesn't need to prove anything to anyone, and neither does Floyd Mayweather, to be honest. So I think they should just go their separate ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the climate we're in with boxing at the minute, where you've got potentially a fight with Roy Jones Jr. and Tommy Fury, and we spoke about, and then now with Francis going into boxing and Manny and Mayweather. So sort of this thing where there's this appeal for exhibition fights and these fights with ex-pros still fighting. And we've talked about it before, and the dangers that can come with that. So yeah, interesting to see how that one plays out. And as we said, a massive UFC card in a couple of weeks, so we'll be covering all of that. And be sure to check out all the combat sports content on the Sports Gazette. But for now, goodbye.